Some segments of this week's episode are not included in this podcast due to rights restrictions. But never fear, the episode can be streamed in its entirety for free at fromthetop.org. Where can you find over 30 million kids studying the piano and over 10 million kids studying the violin? Where is the interest in classical music growing and growing and growing? Why, in China, of course, and that's why we're here today. From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the energy of the world's kids and the power of classical music. Today we're presenting the young students of the Great Wall International Music Academy here in China, and we're coming to you from the Central Conservatory of Music in Beijing. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory, where outstanding young artists and inspirational teachers are transforming classical music. Here's our host, the great concert pianist, Christopher O'Reilly.
Thank you, and welcome. Welcome, everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, for a show that celebrates the future of classical music each week, we have officially arrived in Mecca. I mean, Beijing, of course. Beijing is a city that provides advanced training to many of the best young musicians from all around this vast and fascinating country. And China? Learning how to play a Western classical instrument is more popular here than in any other place in the world, and probably no country will play a bigger role in determining the future of classical music. We're in China for two programs, thanks to our host, the Great Wall International Music Academy, founded and led by the great violin pedagogue standing next to me right now. Please welcome Kurt Sassmannshaus. Kurt Sassmannshaus. Did I pronounce the Chinese version correctly?
Exactly right.
You're from which province?
The far province of Ohio.
Oh, very good. I see. Well, we'll talk about how a German guy from Cincinnati ended up here in Beijing a little later on. But before that, some music. All of the young performers on today's show attend your Great Wall Academy. And let's meet the first one. Who is this lovely young woman?
The first performer is violinist Zhang Jinru from Anhui Province. She's 16 years old.
Welcome, Jinru. Will you please introduce the piece you and I will be performing together?
We will play Gnaeus Brunet in D major.
Kurt, why don't you take a seat? We're going to take it from the top.
Thank you.
Zhang Jinru, 16-year-old violinist performing Vinyavsky's Polonaise in D. Jinru is back at the mics along with Kurt Sossman's house, the head of the Great Wall Academy here in Beijing, where Jinru is spending 4 weeks this summer. Jinru, you grew up in Anhui province. Do your parents play music?
No, my father loves music.
And they're very happy, I'm sure, that you had the opportunity to study. Very happy about that indeed. And like so many talented kids in China, you've moved from far away, from far from home, to study music. You're at the Shanghai Conservatory. Yeah. Happy there?
Yeah, good. Of course. I love our teacher. They're very nice and friendly.
Very nice. Very nice. Kurt, can you tell how Jinru came to be in your summer program here in Beijing?
Yes, we do auditions to the major conservatories in China every December or January. So we usually cover Hong Kong, Chengdu, Wuhan, Shanghai, Beijing, and Taipei. And 3 years ago, Jinru played for us in Shanghai. We were thrilled, and she's been with us ever since and has even won our concerto competition 2 times.
Done very well, yeah. Indeed. We can hear why. Kurt, I think we owe our audience a little explanation of why you are here in Beijing running this wonderful academy. But first, I want to thank Jinru for opening this program so magnificently. Thank you, Jinru. Zhang Jinru, 16 years old, studying at the Shanghai Conservatory, and this summer a student at the Great Wall International Music Academy. So, Kurt, tell us a little bit about the Great Wall International Music Academy.
Yeah, the Great Wall Academy enrolled this year 34 violins, 17 violas, 17 celli, which makes exactly 17 string quartets. The young artists come from all over the world, China, the United States, and other countries. The age is 10 to 25, and we've made exception on either end. Faculty come from the best conservatories around the globe, from China, the US, from Europe. And our goal is to have a meaningful cooperation of these young talents across languages and across cultures, and they are the future leaders in the music field, and we want them to work together and to get to know each other.
It's probably unfair to ask. It's a great, it's a wonderful cultural exchange. You've been running the academy for 8 years. Any particular favorite moments you want to share with us from that time?
There are many wonderful moments. One that I can share is I got an email last season from a young violinist who had been with us several times, and one of the things we do is we give kids chances to play violin concerto with orchestra, which is a rare chance to experience that, and she did very well in an international competition, wrote me an email and said, thank you very much, I wouldn't have gotten that far if I hadn't had these opportunities at the Great Wall Academy.
That experience is invaluable, of course. Well, thank you again for making us part of your season this year, Kurt, and we're going to be seeing you in a moment when you conduct the Academy's Chamber Orchestra, the Great Wall Soloist. But before you leave the stage, would you do us the favor of introducing the next Great Wall kid we're going to be hearing? She's come all the way from Indiana.
Yes, it is Carolyn Ronning from Noblesville, Indiana. She is 17 years old, and she will play the Allegro Appassionato by Saint-Saëns, together with the rather excellent host of From the Top, a pianist by the name of Christopher O'Reilly.
Well, if you say so, all right. Yeah.
Thank you.
Carolyn Ronning, 17 years old, our cellist from Noblesville, Indiana, performing the Allegro Appassionato by Camille Saint-Saëns. Like all the kids on today's show, Carolyn studied this summer at the Bate Wahl International Music Academy. Beautifully done, Carolyn.
Thank you.
Being in Beijing for you is a big deal, I think, for any American. For you, it's even bigger deal. You're not a big traveler, are you?
No, actually, this is my first time out of the country.
And your second time on an airplane at all.
Yes, my second time.
Wow. Your teacher at home, William Grubb, teaches here at the Great Wall Academy, so that's how you found out about this place. But you yourself made this trip possible. Talk about what happened when you first proposed the idea of this trip to your parents.
Well, I wouldn't say that I made it possible because so many people gave and helped me to get here, but when I first told my parents that I wanted to come, they said, no way, it's too far and it's so much money. And so I was more determined even to raise the money and come, and I did.
Wow, so how did you do it?
Well, my brother plays the violin, and we all play music, and we do a lot of gigs, so that helped a lot. And I also babysit a lot and just do random odd jobs.
It's a lot of babysitting to get over to Beijing.
Yes, it was.
And a small church also helped.
Yeah, I gave a concert at a small country church with my brother one evening, and I don't know how the pastor knew, but he knew that I was wanted to go to China. And so he told the congregation, and the next day was a Sunday, and they gave over $1,000
for me
to come.
So I know your parents were really proud of your fundraising efforts, but how did they feel when it actually became possible that you'd be traveling across the globe?
Well, they had two different responses. My dad was very worried, and he didn't want his baby to go far away. But my mom just said, okay, go for it.
Well, to be fair, your mom actually had been to China before.
Yes. When she was 21, she came and taught English.
So now you're here. What do you think?
Oh, it's so different, and it's very overwhelming. From the moment I got off the plane, everything was just so different and exciting.
Very exciting. Well, it's great being an American in China with you. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for
having me. Bravo. Carolyn Ronning, 17 years old, our cellist from Noblesville, Indiana, on her first trip out of the U.S., here for 4 weeks at the Great Wall Academy in Beijing.
Of course, we have tons of photos and video footage of our exciting trip to Beijing and all of the incredible performers we've met here. Go to fromthetop.org. From the Top is made possible in part by the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, advancing the education of students of exceptional promise who have financial need, on the web at jkcf.org. Chris.
Thanks, Joanne. Our next guest, the 17-year-old violist Mei Diyang, is standing on stage with me now. Diyang, you've moved to Beijing to study here at the Central Conservatory of Music, but tell everyone where you're from originally.
Hunan. Hunan, uh-huh. Yeah.
And you have music making in your family, yes?
Yes, my grandfather is a piano teacher.
Aha, very good. The teaching at the Central Conservatory is famous for how competitive it is and how hard the students work. But you amazed and amused us when you told us that last summer you experienced an even more rigorous environment. Where were you studying last year?
Canada.
Wow. Really cutthroat in Canada, huh?
Yeah.
Canada was tougher teaching even than Beijing? Why?
So many lessons, you know.
Oh, many lessons. Okay. Astonishing. Tell everyone what you and I will be performing together.
We will play Brahms Sonata, F minor.
Thank you.
17-year-old violist Mei Jian, studying here in Beijing, performing the opening movement of the Sonata No. 1 by Johannes Brahms.
If you like From the Top, make sure you like us on Facebook. It's the easiest way to stay in touch with everything From the Top. You'll find daily videos, articles, photos, and a thriving community of fans. Join the fun by going to facebook.com/fromthetopfans.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to a vigorous presence for poetry in American culture. PoetryFoundation.org. From the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. And from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. This is NPR.
From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the energy of the world's kids and the power of classical music. This week, we're meeting the young students of the Great Wall International Music Academy in China, and we're coming to you from the Central Conservatory of Music in Beijing. Up next, the Young Chamber Orchestra in today's show performs a traditional Chinese piece evocatively titled Moon Reflecting in the Erschwan Pond. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory, where outstanding young artists and inspirational teachers are transforming classical music. Today's show in Beijing is made possible with support from the Dorothy Richard Starling Foundation. Special thanks to GPBN Architects.
Western classical music isn't new to China. In 1601, an Italian Jesuit named Matteo Ricci visited the emperor and brought a clavichord as a gift. Ricci was hoping for an invitation to stay in Beijing in order to establish a Christian mission, and since nobody else had ever seen a keyboard in China, he got it. Fast forward to the mid-20th century. Conservatories are active in the big cities, and European-style orchestras have been established, including the Shanghai Municipal Orchestra and the brand-new Central Philharmonic, performing here with Liu Shiquan, the pianist who took second place to Van Cliburn in the first Tchaikovsky competition. Sheila Melvin co-wrote the book Rhapsody in Red, How Western Classical Music Became Chinese.
Well, the 1950s was a time of great building because China was close to the Soviet Union in that period. So they created many of the conservatories, symphony orchestras, opera houses were all founded and established. But it was also a time of great debates, because there were some people who thought that Western classical music could serve socialism, and there were other people who said it was too bourgeois and it should be abolished.
But then the Cultural Revolution attempted to wipe out most Western classical music, which was seen as bourgeois. As just one example of how brutal these times were for classical artists, Liu Shiquan, the pianist we've been listening to, was considered a harbinger of a new wave of Chinese pianists until Red Guards tried to break his wrists so he'd never be able to play again. But when the conservatories and universities were allowed to reopen in the late 1970s, the floodgates were lifted, in part because American and European orchestras, conductors, and soloists were invited for visits. Academy Award and Grammy Award-winning composer Tan Dun.
After the Cultural Revolution, there's a big flow of outstanding Western composers and professors, you know, including Mnuchin, including Isaac Stern, including Alexander Gurr from London, and all those wonderful musicians brought just not just a wonderful music, but also it's kind of an institutional mind, actually, how to rebuild the system of music.
We're listening to Tan Dun's score for the film Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. Until the end of the Cultural Revolution, the Chinese had been exposed mostly to Beethoven and the Romantics, or the Russian school of Glinka and Tchaikovsky. Again, Tan Dun.
When we've heard Stravinsky and Debussy, and suddenly we realize, oh my God, music, why could it be composed like this way? Then suddenly we realize what they say, what they write, actually reflecting what we experienced during the last 10 years of Cultural Revolution. For example, I was planting rice, I was feed the pigs, I was organizing all the farmers play the ghost operas and local things. But all of those sounds, actually, it reminds me of a Bartok, you know? So that's why I think this sort of a hungriness and also sort of a missionary kind of a trip from all those wonderful professors all meet together as the best unification, I mean, spiritual unification, yeah.
So, the great hunger for artistic expression following the Cultural Revolution, combined with the freedom to hear the best of 20th century music and the influx of great musicians from the West. And now, China has built new performance venues in nearly every major city, is the leading manufacturer of musical instruments in the world, and has well over 30 million piano students and over 10 million violin students. One reason for the huge number of young students of Western classical music lies in the goals of the Chinese family. Composer Bright Sheng was in the first class admitted to the Shanghai Conservatory when it reopened in 1978 and is a winner of a MacArthur Foundation Fellowship.
Part of the reason Western music is so popular in China was because every family believes that their children should do some kind of arts study. It's a fantastic cultural renaissance.
We're hearing one of China's most famous violinists, Liu Xujiang. Xin Dongcai, who co-wrote Rhapsody in Red, is director of orchestral studies at Stanford.
Children's education in Chinese families is very important, and they believe art takes a very important part in this. And for classical music, one is that classical music has some kind of status, and because of high level. And second, they believe classical music training can help people, help kids to set up discipline. So that can apply to any other studies.
But there are broader social reasons why Western classical music fits so well with China. Again, Sheila Melvin.
Western classical music has always been perceived as a tool in China from the very time when Matteo Ricci first came in and he wanted to use it to help him convert the Chinese to Christianity. And so from then on, the Chinese saw it as modern and progressive, And in later years, they adapted it to help their military be stronger. They thought that Western music was more powerful, would make better soldiers and better fighters. Then the reformists and the socialists adopted it because they thought it would help them to lead the revolution. And then in the 1950s and the 1960s, there was some debate about this. But even Mao Zedong's wife, Jiang Qing, thought that Western musical instruments were more powerful and they would inspire people to revolution more than the traditional Chinese instruments. So the model operas that she created, the revolutionary model operas, all used Western musical instruments. And in more recent years, I think it's really a symbol of, there's the idea in China that if you're going to be a great power, you have to have a great culture. And music is a part of that. Music can make moral people, and music can reflect your morality. And classical music is the best at doing this.
This is Lang Wang, China's most famous classical musician, performing Liszt. And another thing. In America, even though the number of kids playing classical music and playing it really well is growing, music programs in schools are being cut and children aren't being exposed. But in China, Bright Cheng.
But what I'm really excited about is that this generation of children that grows up, when they become middle class, you know, most of them will not be musicians, of course, but they will become a social foundation for Western classical music, to appreciate Western classical music. And that is tremendous.
And now let's hear from some kids who will be those musicians and audiences of the future. On stage is the Chamber Orchestra of the Great Wall International Music Academy here in Beijing, the Great Wall soloists, along with their conductor, the founder of the academy, Kurt Sassmannshaus. Kurt, we're about to hear a beautiful piece called Moon Reflecting in the Erschwan Pond. Can you tell us who wrote this piece?
The composer was Ah Bing, and this version was orchestrated by Wu Su Chang, who was the first president of the Beijing Central Conservatory after the Cultural Revolution.
Ah, very appropriate for our concert today. reflecting in the Ichuan Pond, performed by the Great Wall soloists and musicians from all over the world who are studying here at the Great Wall Academy in Beijing. One of the members of this ensemble, 18-year-old violinist Mao Yiming from the city of Shenzhen, has joined me at the microphones. What a beautiful piece, and how appropriate for you that it fits your personality, Yiming, because I know you're interested very much in traditional Chinese culture. Yeah. What in particular interests you?
Personally, I can't describe all the Chinese culture in these few minutes, so let's talk about the philosophy. And I want to talk about a famous book that written 100,000 years ago named Yi Jing. I like it because it explains the universe, how the universe movement, and how should people behave, and many, many other things. And most important is that it says that everything divides into two parts, yin and yang. And everybody knows Einstein, and he find that everything divided to two parts just 100 years ago. So I think that Yi Jing is more, yeah.
Einstein just made his own translation of the I Ching, I think.
But basically, I don't know whether he know Yi Jing or not.
Oh, I'm sure many people know I Ching. I mean, I know, for instance, the composer John Cage used the Book of Changes in determining parts of his composition, of course.
Yeah.
Are many of your friends your age also interested in I Ching?
No, I don't think so, because I think most of them, they like sport, like basketball, football, or fashion shows.
You also like the traditional Chinese martial arts. Which one do you practice?
I practice Wing Chun for half year. I like Chinese traditional martial art because when I was young, I saw Bruce Lee on the television. And I practice his major. His major is Wing Chun. It's Wing Chun. He practiced Wing Chun when he was young. And I think that Wing Chun is very scientific. It can, it's very scientific for both attack or defend. So that's why the U.S. Marine Corps and FBI, they practice it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's good that you've studied a little Wing Chun now that you'll be able to defend yourself.
Yeah, defend.
Against the...
I practice it for exercise.
For exercise.
Yes, but not for fighting. I don't like fighting.
Well, but, you know, I mean, you may end up in Canada. You may need it. but actually, closer to home and closer to Kurt's heart, I know you'll be at the Cincinnati Conservatory of Music.
Yeah.
You might need a little Wing Chun there, as a matter of fact. You're headed there in the fall, soon, yes?
Yeah, in August.
And this will be the first time you're leaving China?
Yes. No.
No?
Not the first time leaving China.
But,
living
outside of China, certainly.
But it's my first time coming to U.S.
Yeah.
Yeah.
First time living for a long time without your family.
Without my family.
Yeah.
Because when I was born to now, my family, especially my mom, she stayed with me. We travel together. If I have a competition or some performing, she comes with me. Even this Great Wall Music Academy.
Mm-hmm.
So. I will come to America alone. So maybe I will upset for a little bit time, but not too long, because.
Well, I'm sure you will miss her, but we will do our best to make you very much at home in the United States.
Yeah,
and
thank
it was great meeting with you and speaking with you today, Yiming.
Thank you.
Thank you, Yiming. Mao Yiming, 18-year-old violinist from Shenzhen, China, and a member of the Great Wall Soloists.
Podcasts of From the Top are available every week at fromthetop.org. Over the last 5 years, From the Top and the Jack Ken Cook Foundation have awarded well over $1 million in scholarships to talented young musicians who have financial need. We still have more to give.
Go to FromTheTop.org to learn more.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, making grants to solve social and environmental problems at home and around the world, on the web at Hewlett.org. From the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives, at GatesFoundation.org. And from the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at WTGrantFoundation.org. This is NPR.
If you enjoyed this week's podcast, please consider making a gift to keep us broadcasting loud and clear. Go to FromTheTop.org/support.